You are listening to Friends of Europe's podcast. Don't miss our debates on global and European issues that span political, economic, social, and environmental challenges, and follow our website at friendsofeurope.org.
So, good morning, everybody. Dear Commissioner Hahn, dear Deputy Prime Minister Bissimi, Mr. State Secretary Ivan Kochok, very good, long-time friend of mine. We've known each other now for maybe almost sort of 13 years or something. Mrs. Crawley, ladies and gentlemen, excellencies, dear friend of Konrad Adenauer Foundation and friends of the Friends of Europe. With the term Balkans route and images of thousands of refugees crossing the countries of the region, the Balkans returned to Europe's headlines and gained public attention worldwide. The countries in the southeast and southeast Europe became the primary transit route for refugees towards the West, and therefore they've been affected with unforeseen political, humanitarian, and organizational challenges. Once more, it becomes clear that this part in the heart of Europe is an important factor for development and peace. But there have not only been challenges from the outside, but inner state decisions which influenced the improvement of the Western Balkan states. Significant progress has been made in the areas of rule of law and respect for fundamental rights. Thus, the Western Balkan countries are being considered as safe countries of origin by all EU member states. In the economic area, the reform process is continuing, and it should improve the living conditions, and it should ensure that well-educated young people are not forced to leave their countries, but rather stay within and contribute their share to the welfare of their home countries. The need of structural reforms in many sectors is still visible, and it's aiming to improve physical and human capital, industrial structures and business environment, and trade integration in order to boost competitiveness, employment and long-term growth in the Western Balkan countries. And therefore, we are pleased, together with our partners, the Friends of Europe and the UNDP, to host this conference and to welcome our high-ranking speakers and guests. Let's become a tradition in this conference that is taking place now for the 15th time that I say a couple of words in my favorite language and then conclude. Drage dame i gospodo, hvala vam što ste došli na našu ovogodišnju konferenciju, Balkansku konferenciju, i hvala na vašoj pozornosti. Ja vam želim svima dobre diskusije i uspješnu konferenciju. Dobrodošli, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Stefan. Good morning, everyone. I'm Shada Islam. I'm Director of Policy at Friends of Europe, and you'll be seeing a lot of me this morning because I'll be co-moderating the three panel discussions with Stefan and with my colleague Giles Merritt. Just a few words before I give the floor to Commissioner Johannes Hahn. We're holding this conference for the 15th time, but you'll agree that this is a very important time for the Western Balkans and also for the European Union. Of course, Stefan has talked about the unprecedented number of refugees that are transiting through this region to go northwards. There's a question of economic growth in that region as well, faltering economic growth, rule of law, governance issues are raised. At the Munich Security Conference that was just held in Munich, there was discussion of the return of the Cold War, and this, of course, has an enormous impact on the Western Balkans. And, of course, Brussels is talking about or has decided on a moratorium on enlargement till 2019, and this, of course, is creating enlargement fatigue there in the Western Balkans as well. To talk about these and other issues, we've assembled a great panel, thanks to Konrad Adenauer Stiftung as well. To my right, of course, is Mr. Johannes Hahn, European Commissioner for European Neighbourhood Policy and Enlargement Negotiations. Welcome, Commissioner Hahn, to Friends of Europe and CAS. Mr. Fatmir Besimi, I'm not going to read out the CVs. You have them in your conference packs. We're short of time, so I'm going to be very brief. Fatmir Besimi, thank you very much for coming as well. Deputy Prime Minister of FIROM, a pleasure to have you here. Pleasure also to have Heaven Crawley. She's Chair in International Migration at the Centre for Trust, Peace and Social Relations at the Coventry University. Thank you very much. And last but not least, Ivan Korchok, Slovak State Secretary for Foreign and European Affairs, who is on his way to the Foreign Affairs Council and coming from the Visegrad 4 meeting held in Prague. So some important news that, Ivan, I hope you will be telling us about. So without further ado, Commissioner, I would like to give you the floor.
Thank you very much, and good morning to everybody. First and foremost, I would like to, to address what you have said as a moratorium till 2019, or as it is in the program, there's an enlargement still stand. If it would be like this, I wouldn't be here. Huh? Only yesterday, I think we had a great day because Bosnia-Herzegovina submitted its membership application, which was not, no one would expect such a development if you look back into the situation of Bosnia-Herzegovina even a year ago. So I think there's a lot of progress. We have opened new chapters with Montenegro, and we have started negotiations with Serbia. So the probably well known, there is an acceleration or relaunch of the negotiations with Turkey. So in that way, I think no one can speak about a kind of stillstand. What Juncker has said, and I repeat it again and again, was simply that by the end of this mandate, it's unlikely that any new country will join the Union, which is clear in terms of the technicalities. So we are by far not interested on any kind of stop of enlargement, in particular when it comes to the Western Balkan. There's a clear commitment of the European family that the Western Balkan countries should become member of the European Union, and we are working very hard on this goal. And for instance, I have seen also in the program you will discuss, for instance, the Western Balkan process and things like that. This, everything contributes to this issue. When it comes to the refugee crisis is, because I'm a member of the half-full glass party, I think the refugee crisis can support these efforts because it demonstrates that the Western Balkan countries are in one or the other way already, so to say, member of the club. Or our understanding is that in particular, in this case, a solution is only possible if there is a close cooperation between those who are already members of the Union and those who are not yet members. And if you look into the geographical situation, the non-members are surrounded by members, and therefore in this particular case, we have to collaborate in a very close way, and we do it. And so we had a Western Balkan summit last autumn. The outcome was, a significant improvement of the logistics, because so far this country serves as a transit country, which has indeed created further north to some problems. But in terms of cooperation, I think this was a good summit. But on the other hand, and this is one of my main, if you like, political tasks, to take care that the non-EU member states in the regions, but also the member states, are not becoming the parking lot for refugees. And therefore, I'm very grateful, happy, however you might call it, that we have now this NATO decision, having a joint border control at the Turkish-Greek sea border. And I hope this will significantly reduce the refugee flow and mitigate the pressure. And if I'm looking into the figures of the last couple of days, and I was also looking into the weather, so to say, forecasts, we can see a significant decline, and I hope it stays. It should. And if this is the case, I think there might be a relief for the countries on this route, but maybe we will hear something later. I fear that the flow might again move back to the west, because in Libya we face already thousands, if not millions, of people waiting to cross the sea. So it's not that we can say the refugee flow has stopped, but it's maybe that it might move back to the west. But coming to the Balkan again, as I have said, I'm, so to say, a member of the half-full glass, and the whole exercise and the whole way how we cooperate on this issue with all these sometimes visible bilateral tensions show nevertheless the necessity of a close cooperation, of an inclusion, and it also reveals that we need this kind of cooperation also in terms of the economic development of the country, of the countries in the region, which I think is decisive for a future membership in the European Union. If you look into the macroeconomic figures, unemployment rate, things like that, we have to address this issue also in our negotiations. That's why I prefer to speak about a process and less about negotiations, because it's also about the development of these countries, not only in the areas of rule of law, but also in the economic development. And I believe, and this is, so to say, one of my key messages, there is a correlation between economic development being attractive for foreign investors and rule of law, independence of judiciary, transparency, and all these things which are decisive in order to attract foreign investors, which will only come into a country if they can rely on the judiciary. So the whole refugee stream has produced a kind of public attention, awareness, focus on the region, and this should be used to transport certain messages, certain images in a positive way about the countries, about the regions. The countries should use it, because so far they have done an excellent job in a true European spirit, and we should use it and we should build on it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Hahn, thank you very much indeed. You've raised some very important points, and I think we'll come back to you, and I will turn to you once the other panelists have spoken. Mr. Barsimi, I wanted to come to you on the question that Commissioner Hahn has raised, saying that the refugee crisis has actually increased our attention on the Western Balkans and made us more aware of the way we're knitted together, the way we are working together. And I was wondering if you could give your comments on that.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Actually, that's one of the aspects that we have seen during this period, and that is that during the crisis we stick together. Our cooperation became a must. And I mentioned last time, last evening, the same aspects, and it can be visible also if you consider how many meetings has been held among the leaders of the Western Balkan countries and the European leaders for this period since we have the refugee crisis in the region, and compared to, let's say, 5 years in the past. So we will see the difference. The point I want to make here is that, as it is said, in any crisis we should see the opportunity. And here the opportunity is that we become more creative. We think more on different mechanisms to enhance our cooperation, and we act faster. So these are the things, maybe the lessons that we can learn also for the process of enlargement. Because longer it takes it's not becoming just easier. If we just let the countries by themselves, the outcome that we expect from enlargement will not be as we expect on the certain time. What I want to say here, the point that I want to make in this context is look at the results. Commissioner Hahn mentioned the success that we had on enlargement for the region, Bosnian application, then Serbian opening negotiations, Kosovo signing the Stability and Association Agreement. So all this, and also Montenegro years before starting the negotiations. But in all this, we have seen a critical role that European Union has had in facilitating the process. Even on the domestic issues, I can share with you our experience in Macedonia, that we had direct involvement and facilitation of political dialogue in the country among the political leaders, where directly is involved Commissioner Hahn, but also we have this experience with this facilitation that happened, the dialogue between Serbia and Kosovo. So from this point of view, I want to say that for us in this process, looking on the EU integration, it's important to think on stronger cooperation and speeding up the process. In terms of the refugee crisis, I think that we as a country, and not only as a country but as a region, should have a stronger cooperation with Europe. Not only cooperation, but we should have coordinated stronger coordination, but also a consistent policy from all European member states in terms of the refugee crisis, because in this situation for us it's extremely important to see that these policies and the actions from European Union and agreement with Turkey will work successfully. So we will do then our job in terms of border control, and this also was one part of the direct cooperation that we had. The Frontex mission, we had some bilateral support in the border control, and we still need support on border control and registration, because that is not only a security issue for Macedonia but for whole Europe. So, thanks.
Professor Crowley, you've been busy with research as to migration flows for a very long time already. And as I said before, and I think we all agree on that, this is an unprecedented phenomenon that we're witnessing right now. I remember that you sort of shocked us a little yesterday night in saying this is just the start. Is there more to come, and what's to come, and how can we react to that?
Thank you. Yes, I have been working in this area for around 25 years, conducting research, primarily with migrants and refugees who are making the journey, but also working with policymakers to understand the dynamic relationship between people on the move and people who are making policies in response to that. And I suppose in response to your question, I want really to challenge the idea of a refugee crisis in Europe by situating the movement of people into this region in a global context. Because, of course, although there have been a million people who've arrived in Europe over the last year through irregular means, in fact, many millions of people travel regularly around Europe and into Europe for work, for students, as tourists, and it causes much less of a political ripple, if you like. Of course, this level of movement reflects globalization. It reflects the fact that there are more people on the move globally. Around 250 million people a year live outside their countries of origin, and we have a large number of people who are displaced, around 60 million. So it's not that I want to say that this isn't a crisis in terms of the individual lives that are affected by the movement, but I do think it's important to see the movement in Europe in that global context, to recognise that the vast majority of refugees, about 90%, remain in their countries and regions of origin, and that not everyone is heading to the EU, contrary to the sort of dominant political and policy and, of course, media narratives. And perhaps if I may be a little controversial, if some of them were, it might not be a bad thing, given what we know about the demographic deficit in Europe and the need for between 50 and 70 million people outside of Europe to come between now and 2050 to make up some of those deficiencies that we are expecting in terms of the tax income and working labour. I think, though, that leads to a second point, really, which is around questioning some of the assumptions that underpin the policy discourse, not just at the European level, but also in member states and non-member states indeed. So I think the key problem we have here is this notion of push and pull, which you see and hear all the time in the policy narrative and discourse. Now, this idea, this theory of push and pull, was formulated in the early 20th century, when the world was frankly a very different place than the one we have now. It presupposes that people on the move have an equal knowledge about what is going on elsewhere, that they equally have the resources to move, and it assumes, if you like, a rational economic motivation for their movement, when in fact we know that the movement of people is also driven by a whole range of other uneconomic factors, including relationships and love and all those things that make us human. I think the other thing is that the push-pull narrative ignores the role of other players, of smugglers, of agents, of people who are making big money out of the movement of people. It ignores the role of technology, which is changing the way in which people are moving and indeed where they're moving to. And I think it crucially, for the purpose of this discussion, ignores the interface between migrant decision-making and the policies themselves. So there are assumptions being made about what a policy change, what impact that will have on the movement of people from a particular place. And as the Commissioner has alluded to, I think the reality is that some of the impacts of those policies are not really known and potentially not very predictable. And that's because some of the underlying factors that are driving migration, which include, of course, conflict and war in the regions of Syria and elsewhere, but they also include poverty and a lack of opportunity and a hopelessness which drives people onward, even when it might appear, if you looked at it rationally, that they shouldn't make the choice to move. So hope is a really important factor in the decision for people to leave. And that brings me to another point, really, which is about the narrative of the Western Balkans, which, of course, right now is one of transit. But we also know that for the Balkan region as a whole, migration has been and continues to be a very important part of the story. So around half of all the asylum applications in Germany over the last year have been from the Balkan states, have been from Serbia, from Kosovo, from Albania. And those are people who are moving for economic reasons, for whom there is no opportunity to legally move. And that really challenges the ability of the asylum system to address and deal with some of the causes of forced migration that we're seeing. So I suppose what I'm suggesting is that if you really look at the evidence about the dynamics of migration, actually what we need is a slightly different political narrative. And we also need a form of political leadership at the EU and national level, which really contextualizes migration, which sets migration in this broader context of global flows of people, of demographic change and of economic development. And I suppose I think the key really is that, I suppose if I'm honest, when I started working in this area 25 years ago, the realities of migration were very different, but the policy discourse was not dissimilar to what it is now. So if you like, the policy is out of sync with the reality of what we're seeing in terms of global migration. And we need leaders at whatever level to be able to sort of step up and to show the leadership that's needed to shift the political narrative and in turn shift potentially the public narrative. It feels to me as if states have backed themselves into a political corner, particularly the old EU states. And I would like to see the new member states and the prospective member states really show a different kind of leadership and say, actually, the world has changed and we need to change with it.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Professor Crawley. We need action from the new member states, Ivan. You've just arrived from the Visegrad 4 summit yesterday night in Prague. And when I switched on the television set pretty late in the night, around midnight yesterday night, of course, this was the top news.
and on the German in the German media, and the and basically the message was the Easterners are going to form another Ostblock, so an Eastern Bloc, justified or unjustified. I'm just reporting here. And of course, again, justified or unjustified, it is a fact that some of the governments, at least the Hungarian and the Polish one, are not the darlings of German media. So anyway, maybe you can tell us a little about what happened yesterday night and what's the assessment and where do you see the role of the new member state countries that might lead, as Professor Crawley just requested.
Thank you, Stefan, for this question, and I'll be very frank and open with you because I too was astonished when I turned on TV very late last night and I saw the reports by German media, especially about the plot that took place allegedly in Prague last night. So was the case this morning. And frankly, this is not very pleasant for us to be labeled like that, not at all. For some, it could be flattering if you're amidst of media reports from a regular meeting of Visegrad member states. By the way, we gathered in Prague last night to celebrate the 25th anniversary of Visegrad, but the agenda was, of course, different. Can I make 3 points here in this connection? First, we've met last night, as we regularly do, ahead of European councils, and our major point was to look at how we implement what we have agreed in order to achieve the objective that the European Council has set repeatedly, namely to stem the flow of irregular migration. And our clear assessment is that we, in many measures that we have agreed, we are lagging behind, and therefore Visegrad Group, also on the basis of yesterday meeting, will certainly mobilize later this week in the European Council and say that this is maybe one of the last opportunities at the beginning of this year to really deliver on what we have agreed. We are wondering how we are implementing our EU-Turkey action plan. And by the way, I want to thank the Commission, because Commissioner Hahn is here, for preparing a ground for a very open discussion, because you have produced three very important reports which provide a very clear overview where we actually stand with the implementation of our plan. We want to ask how we are performing when it comes to the protection of external borders, how hotspots are being established and whether they are operable in both Greece and Italy. Simply how we perform on what was agreed, because I think we need action here. You are right. Secondly, of course, controversy was caused by the decision of Czech V4 presidency, which was backed by Poland, Czech Republic, Poland, Hungary, and Slovakia, namely to invite two countries which are heavily exposed on the Western Balkan route, namely Bulgaria and Macedonia. And I can explain that how this idea was brought about to invite them for this meeting. First of all, we in January and beginning of this month, we are witnessing yet again the very high numbers of number of those migrants coming from Turkey to Greece, and therefore we know if this continues, we will see just a repetition of a situation that we were witnessing last year. Second point, there was a communication between the President of the European Commission, President Juncker, and Slovenian Prime Minister Miro Cerar. And I can quote from it why we have decided to just to follow what is in there. President Juncker has responded to the letter addressed to him by, as I said, Slovenian Prime Minister. And President Juncker says, "I welcome your suggestion that all EU member states should provide assistance to the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia to support controls at the border with Greece." So I don't understand actually the controversy or spectacularity with which we were labeled as those who are causing disunity in the European Union when we do exactly what President Juncker has recommended for all of us to do it bilaterally when it comes to countries like Macedonia and Bulgaria in this case, namely to help them. Because if we see 80,000 came to Europe from Turkey via Greece, and they will go via Macedonia and Bulgaria further north, to the north, I think we all are bound to help those countries. So that was the second reason. The third reason, obviously, and here we too thank the Commission for providing us a clear picture, was the Schengen evaluation report that was produced and clearly stated deficiencies in both Greece and Italy. And let me be clear, we've known for quite a long that there are these deficiencies, but I'm glad that we have now launched a process how to address those deficiencies. All in all, the three elements were those who have caused the fact that we have invited the two countries. And third point, look, we are aware that maybe the mere fact that four countries are meeting ahead of European Council, that we are speaking openly about the fact that what happened last year is not sustainable if it is repeated this year. Let me be honest. If this is causing controversy, then I believe, as very often in the past, solutions are being born in European Union out of controversy and out of conflicts. It resembles a lot the Euro crisis, which I have had a chance to experience here, that all the important solutions that led us at the end to rescue the Eurozone were born out of conflict. Do you believe that creation of banking union? I don't want to go too far from this issue, but I sense it right now that we are mobilizing. Yes, there is controversy, there are dividing lines, but it is not for the first time that I'm sure, and that's the, I want to cast a little doses of optimism that out of those controversies, out of our insistence that either we regain control at external borders, or we will have to be forced to reintroduce control at internal borders. Without this very open discussion, I don't think we will be able to act very, very rapidly and very quickly. So that was the background of what happened last night in Prague. And we will mobilize at the end of this week, because two, I want to say, of course, the issue number one, don't forget, for the upcoming European Council on Thursday, Friday is UK. but we don't think, respecting that this is absolutely crucial that we have a deal for United Kingdom, but I do think that we need to mobilize to simply implement what we have agreed to stem the flow of this irregular migration. Thank you.
So, Commissioner Hahn, are you reassured that the four or the six are not plotting a coup within the EU? That probably reassures you, if you had any doubt. But what do you think of the implicit warning as well that Mr. Korchok has given, which is that if this is a repeat this year of what happened last year in terms of refugees, that is not sustainable?
Look, I was... because when I came into office in 1st of November 2014, and also already before. I mean, if you look into the situation, and it was mentioned by Professor Corley, we are facing unprecedented high number of refugee, migrants, internal displaced people around Europe, 20 million at least, yeah? And another 60 million globally, but even this figure might be, so to say, not the upper limit. There are much higher estimations of people intending to migrate or to move in one or the other way. So it was pretty clear that at a certain moment this or part of these 20 million might start moving towards Europe. And we are only talking about those who are, so to say, living in the proximity of Europe. Everything what we have seen, for instance, last year and the year before at the Western Mediterranean have been migrants from far away, most of them. Only the refugee stream at the Western Balkans, these are at least last year primarily refugees from Syria, but I would say this was more an opener. And today we have already more than 60% of refugees being non-Syrians, and even this so-called 40% might be too high, because in the meantime, some, if not many people, pretend to be Syrians with a false passport. So this only as a detail. But I wanted to come back on your question. I'm explaining this because I was always advocating, knowing the facts and the figures, that we need a really functioning external border control. This is all about, and this is still valid more than ever. We have to protect our external borders. We have to regain control about the influx to Europe. If this is the case, I think also the mood in the population will change, because there are often discussions, is Europe not able to take 1 million people? Of course, if you take the overall number of inhabitants, more than 500, it's the case. But it's the way how they have arrived and how they still arrive, in a way that people believe the state authorities are not able to protect, to control the borders. And this is so decisive that we change this and regain confidence and trust. And then I think much more is possible than it is currently the case. So this is, I think, the most important objective. And that's why it's so important to work on our external borders. And honestly, the letter of the Slovenian Prime Minister and the response by our President, I think it was in January. In the meantime, things have changed. Once again, my focus is on protecting the external borders. All the other measures are, so to say, secondary measures, are replacements of something which has not functioned. And therefore, once again, our focus must be external borders. Why? Because it's also about Schengen. Schengen is not a mere principle. Schengen, in the meantime, has, so to say, changed the way how we are living in Europe. I know so many people living in the one country, working in the other country, commuting on a daily basis with a 5-10 minutes drive. The country I know best, we share the same airport, Vienna, Bratislava, West Hungary, south of Sweden, Copenhagen, 50, 60,000 people crossing the bridge every day. So, I mean, Luxembourg, Belgium, we are used to have a borderless mobility. I mean, it was a shock, I think quite a helpful one, when European bureaucrats and politicians flying from Brussels to Strasbourg had to show passports for the first time since ages. Yeah. Probably some of them didn't have anyone with them. So therefore, there is a strong effort to regain control about our borders. And there's one element I would like to address in a more general way, and probably it's something for another meeting and conference, because we have to work on it. We had a huge enlargement in 2004. And everybody was enthusiastic, rightly so. But I have some experience in business life, and I know 75% of mergers fail because the managers haven't been able to harmonize the different cultures of the companies. And the same applies for countries. We had an enlargement. It was in a period of economic boom, of enthusiasm, of a feeling that everything will go well. And Europe, the European Union, to a certain degree, is a kind of blue heaven construction. And if there are particular challenges and pressures, it reveals some of our deficiencies. I was member of Barroso II Commission, and we had to address the economic crisis. Member states have reacted by transferring certain rights and obligations to the European level, and we are now facing an unprecedented refugee flow. And also here we have to see what is necessary to be decided on a European level and what can stay on a national level. I believe much more could remain at the national level, but if it's substantially, if it affects the whole Europe, we should have tools and instruments which allows us to react faster, as this is currently the case. This is also the reason why the Commission had put forward a proposal about external border protection system, which allows us to really take care about our external borders. What I'm saying, finally, is if we have overcome this current crisis, I believe we have to work on, so to say, a better understanding of our different cultures, backgrounds, experiences amongst our member states. The, so to say, the power of this little Europe is its diversity. We are proud of it, and we should be proud of it also in the future. But we have to be aware about it, and we have to see what are the common necessary denominators and what is not necessary to be, if you like, united. But we need a common understanding in order not to have discussions or comments like we just could witness in apparently not only German media, but vice versa and so on. The crisis has indeed created some, how to say, bad feelings, but it's good to have seen it, but it's also necessary to address it and to overcome it.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. I think you're absolutely right. Time to move on and to learn from our lessons of experience as well. I'd like to now open the floor for questions. The Commissioner has to leave in about 10 minutes. So if you do have a question for the Commissioner, I would urge you to do so now. Please identify yourself and keep your question very, very short so the Commissioner and the other panelists have time to respond. So I have a hand going up there. Fabio, do you see that? A gentleman there as well, I think.
Kurt Geisert, I'm a member of the team of external speakers of the European Commission. I had a group from Konrad Adenauer Foundation some days ago, and Commissioner Hahn, they addressed the question which you raised right now. Why barriers at the frontier between Greece and Macedonia? If any, should this not be only for the time being until the system of external borders functions?
I'll take another question. There was a, yes, gentleman at the back as well.
There'll be any question, Stefano Stefanini, Atlantic Council, but I'll just, just one thing, I'm surprised that in taking stock of what happened this year in terms of the Balkans, the most important thing wasn't mentioned is the NATO invitation to Montenegro. But my question is the following. It is quite clear that the EU is going to try to slow down the inflow of the refugees, and Commissioner Hand just said it. Does this, in view of the panel, where does this leave the Balkans? Closer or more separate from the EU, given also the geographical situations where the external border partly excludes and partly includes the Western Balkans? Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner, would you like to respond to these two questions, and then I'll turn the microphone to the other panelists.
Once again, when it comes to the border between Fyrom and Greece, honestly, I understand the reactions, but nevertheless, I, for two main reasons, I'm, so to say, still advocating external border protection, and I think this is so important because it's about Europe. Second, one should not underestimate that it was said by the Deputy Prime Minister, we have gone a long way together in order to overcome also the internal political crisis in Fyrom. So to say, one of the reasons why the situation of the country is, to a certain extent, as it is also the fact that Skopje was granted candidate status in 2005, and it was never, so to say, transferred in concrete negotiations. There is this well-known name issue, and we can see that the new Greek government is more open-minded to work on a possible solution. And I'm very supportive on that. And I fear if there is, so to say, a growing tension between the two countries because of the border, it might have an impact on the just, so to say, very on this very recent development to overcome a political stalemate of years. And therefore, also for that reason, in particular in my capacity as Enlargement and Neighbourhood Commissioner, I have a strong interest that this doesn't become a sustainable border. Concerning the other question, once again, I believe this crisis has opened the window in the way that much more people, politicians, are looking to the Western Balkans. And I hope we can use, so to say, this momentum and turn the critical aspect of this, so to say, development in a positive one, and that there is a better understanding amongst the European leaders that the Western Balkan countries are, so to say, surrounded by already EU member states, and that it is quite clear that at a certain moment they should also join the family, if you like. And this momentum should be used, should be turned in a positive, so to say, way forward. And if this is the case, and we are working on that, I think once again a crisis has produced something good.
Thank you very much. I would like to turn to Deputy Prime Minister Simi to answer maybe the question of the Greek-Macedonia border, because that directly, of course, touches upon your jurisdiction.
Yeah, thank you. Actually, I will try to explain this. As I mentioned at the beginning, the crisis can be an opportunity to strengthen our cooperation. And that worked out with, I would like to say, with the support of EU in this case on our border cooperation. Since we have the Frontex and also bilateral member states supporting our border control, we also have intensified the cooperation on registration with Greek authorities on the border, so, and also with the intelligence. And I would like to share with you just very few data that can show the results of that. Actually, you can see that since August last year, about 17,000 illegally passing the border has been stopped since August, but only in January 2000, out of them, only in January has been 2,000 found out illegally passing the border, and in December 1,500. So it shows that the effectiveness of the controlling from illegal passing, but in the other way, to support and to provide a proper migration process passing through Macedonia, and also taking care of their integrity. So we have the capacity for 2,000 in 72 hours to provide this crossing. On the other side, although it's data, but I want to say with you that during this period, with the better registration, we managed to about 16,000 economic immigrants to return back. And out of them, only on January has been 7,000 out of them in January because we had a better registration. On the other side, there has been counterfeited or fake documents, about 8,000 found out, and only on January 3,000 out of them. So better cooperation, better control, we can help better with the limited resources to the people that really are in need on the refugees. So therefore, this cooperation and this support is essential for managing better with the refugee crisis. And how it worked out in our cooperation with Greece, I can say that just imagine on the situation that we did not have this support and cooperation on the border control, it could have been a spot of additional sensitive issues in our bilateral relationship. But on the contrary, this all worked out to prove that in such situation, our cooperation can be helpful. I just want to add here that on this context about the cooperation and overall, I know that we are running out of time, just to point once again what I wanted to say at the beginning. The cooperation is essential also in the for the enlargement and finding out mechanisms how we proceed on this. I want to say the expectations and the results that we are expecting also from the connectivity agenda, which strengthened the cooperation on the countries and the region. And on the other side, what we got out from this new methodology on the progress report this year, if you do the mapping of the countries at the stage of development, I will take the case of Macedonia on the acquis. And you see that our country is, although we cannot do a straightforward comparison, but just for an indication. The level of development where we stand is higher, but when you see the speed, you see the difference that make Montenegro and Serbia once they started the negotiations. So this is clearly, you can see in the map. Once again, I'll repeat, it's just an indication. It doesn't say the full story, but it is an indication that as far as we have the mechanism to strengthen the cooperation with countries in the Western Balkans on EU integration process, it helps the process to speed up. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Professor Crawley, Commissioner Hahn had asked for intensified external border control, and it's been repeated by Deputy Prime Minister Bissimi as well. And we were talking about this yesterday night during the pre-conference dinner. And of course, intensifying external border control, and Mr. Bissimi has made this point just a couple of seconds ago, also means keep people out. In other words, keep those people out that do not have a right under any law and under any convention to seek a shelter within the EU countries. But of course, this is painful. It's a painful process to keep people out and to let people stay maybe at the border. The Turkish border has again been closed yesterday, at least temporarily, and people cannot migrate into Turkey from Syria right now. And of course, this will create pictures that we don't like. It's going to be a painful process. Is European society ready for that?
Well, I think it's really important to look at the wider issue and to have a holistic perspective, actually, because although external border controls and the establishment of those more effectively are very important in terms of the political narrative and in terms of, you know, providing some reassurance to the publics that there is not a situation of crisis, certainly in terms of the management of those flows. The reality is that external border controls on their own are not only going to be very difficult to implement when people have rights under international refugee to claim asylum and are not currently able to get access to that right, but are also not going to solve the problem in the longer term. So if we're talking about a holistic approach to migration, then we need to think about not just external border controls, but how we provide routes of entry, legal and safe routes of entry for people who are entitled to international protection, and suggesting that they might get that in Turkey if they're Syrian is simply not correct, because Turkey has withheld its geographical limitation to the 1951 Refugee Convention, and despite some efforts to try and improve, for example, the treatment of Syrian refugees in Turkey, all the evidence is that the standards of living, etc., for Syrians in Turkey is very low, and that's why many choose to make the onward journey. And I think also we need to not just focus on Syria. We have a tendency in migration policy to focus on the most immediate situation that is pressing upon us. But we don't need to look very far into the future, and indeed we wouldn't have need to look very far forward in the past to see that coming along are other kinds of issues. We haven't talked about Ukraine, 2 million people displaced on the borders of Eastern Europe. We haven't talked about Iraq, 2.5 million people displaced who are now under severe pressure and are pushing upwards, potentially into Libya and elsewhere. We haven't talked about the pressures in other parts of sub-Saharan Africa, where people may migrate for economic reasons, but due to the nature of the journey and their travels through Libya, may very quickly become in refugee-like situations. Now, for those populations, closing off a border, whether that's Macedonia or whatever it is not necessarily going to stop them from making that journey. They need to feel that they've got access to protection, and they need to feel that they have got some hope that their investment in their future, made by their families and others, has been worthwhile. And so for those people, and I would suggest people within Europe for whom there are no legal routes to labour migration, including in the Western Balkans, we need to open up legal channels for labour migration. This is, I know everyone is incredibly resistant to this idea, but the Migration Commissioner was talking about it only 3 days ago when I was in Athens, and I think there is a realisation that actually it's not just about border control, it's about safer legal routes for protection, and it's about legal routes for migration. And once you start to have a kind of holistic approach to migration, you're not then focusing all of your energies on a border, which, frankly, the pressure could change if the nature of the impending conflict or crisis shifts with it. So we are, as the Commissioner said, already thinking that there may well be a Western movement if the Turkish route becomes closed to people, and equally there could be a route up through Bulgaria or through Estonia for those people who feel that that's the other alternative. So I do think there's a danger of dealing with the latest situation and not thinking ahead to what might come forward. And I suppose it takes me back to my earlier point that over the last 25 years, we've talked constantly about the need for a better kind of external border in Europe to allow exactly this free movement within Europe, which is such an important part of our identity as Europeans. Admittedly, not for me as a Brit, because I still need a passport to travel around Europe because we're not part of Schengen. But if we want to maintain that, we have to accept that simply always looking at the external border as being the solution to saving our internal freedom of movement hasn't historically proven to be the case, and I would suggest that we need a sort of different way of looking at the whole picture, not just part of it.
Well, of course, everybody regrets that you have to carry around a passport to go from one European country to the other. Commissioner Hahn wanted to react directly.
Only briefly, I think we have to distinguish between refugees and migrants. And this leads me to a second point. It's probably easier, also we are not yet there, to have a joint European, so to say, asylum policy. But it's more challenging, and here I really would like to ask think tanks and others to look into it. Is it even possible to have a joint European migration policy? Because I think this is much more challenging. We are often compared with the United States, Canada, Australia, even New Zealand. Yeah? I mean, this is not fair, or this is not feasible, because we have a different geographical situation, and even more, we are much more diversified internally. I mean, we have a situation in in the middle of Europe, in the northern part of Europe, where we are lacking skilled labor workforce. And on the other hand, we have other countries where we have still a high unemployment rate. We have a poor European internal mobility rate, less than 3% of Europeans are living in another European country than in the country they are born. So this compared to this, but this is probably also due to language issues, etc. So the situation in, we have a brain drain in Europe. So also Europe internally, we are extremely, so to say, diversified. And this makes it nearly unrealistic, at least shortened, in a shortened medium term, that we can have a joint European migration policy. But we should work on this in order indeed to address the issues the professor has mentioned. So about refugees is something else. I don't want to play down, so to say, the level of the problem, but in principle it's something which is manageable. More challenging is the whole migration issue, because here we are facing a much higher number of, so to say, candidates which would like to arrive in Europe. And by the way, this should be something where Europe, in a way, should be more proud about it, that we are still so attractive that many people want to come to Europe, believing here is not only a better life in terms of their personal economic standard and level, but also in terms of rule of law, preserving the rights of individuals, etc. So Europe is still very attractive, and we Europeans should be proud about it.
Thank you very much for this positive perspective. Ivan, the Commissioner sort of incidentally addressed the question of do we need a European migration policy at all? And if we need one, do we need other tools? Do we need additional tools? I recall that the EPP slogan still is, the answer is more Europe. Do we need, is the European Union as it stands at all capable of dealing with a crisis of this extent? Are the competences there on the side of the European Union, particularly on the side of the European Commission, to deal with those questions, when actually it all comes down to the decisions of the European Council? In other words, things are being dealt with intergovernmentally.
Stefan, I don't think we should now be engaged in a discussion, a very broad, general discussion, whether we have enough competencies or not. The mantra became European unity. By the way, you know, countries like Slovakia and Visegrad countries are blamed for being those who have caused this division in our common attempt to get this under control. But there is, I strongly disagree with it, because there is just one single point where the Visegrad countries disagree, and that's the relocation policy. And imagine we had not this division. Imagine we were all united, including on the issue of relocation. Would we be today, as we speak, better off? Because if I look at the figures of those who were relocated from Greece and Italy, I don't think we would be better off in terms of the continuing inflow of migrants who are still crossing the borders which are not protected. I cannot agree more with what Commissioner Hahn has said when he said, I prefer the protection of external borders to establishing control on internal borders. But that's the problem that we are having, because in the initial phase of this crisis, we have not seen any control or protection of external borders. We have been witnessing a waving through policy. And that is the problem. He is absolutely right that people in Europe would accept more refugees and more migrants, more of those who are eligibly protected as refugees, had the dynamic not been that high. 1 million coming simply to a country, that simply is shocking for many citizens across Europe. And that's why I think look, one of the operative outcome of yesterday was that we are pushing for a much faster work on establishing the European border and coast guard. We find it totally ridiculous when we agree that in order to better protect external borders, there is a proposal by the Commission to establish European border and coast guard. And the European Council back in December said that we are ready to come to an agreement in the Council, within the legislative work, by the end of Dutch presidency. So we are allowing ourselves another 6 months just to come to an agreement in the Council, and then we start legislative work with European Parliament, and then we have a ceremonial, and then at the end of this year, we maybe will be able to help countries like Greece to protect their external borders. So we in Visegrad are bad guys, because we are pushing for speeding up and delivering on what we have promised. By the way, I want to go further. I've noticed, and you might have noticed as well, that President Verhofstadt, that he proposed that we establish immediately a group of 2,000, a rapid emergency external border protection group. Why not to go for that type of quick solutions? And that is bringing me back to your question, Stefan. No, we are not lacking competence. We are lacking our ability to deliver immediately on what we have agreed. That's our malaise, and that's the experience always from the past crisis that we have been going through, including in Eurozone. At the beginning, that's the behavioral pattern in European Union. That we first look at it, then we think we can somehow deal with it, and then we are completely overwhelmed. And only then we are acting. And last point, because we are discussing Western Balkans, either we re-establish an order on the external borders, or Schengen will collapse. And if Schengen collapses, that touches me directly, because today, Johannes, I'm flying back via Vienna. This is my airport. And if I should be stopped at the border between Slovakia and Austria, that's a problem. But that would be even bigger disaster politically. What kind of signal are we sending to the countries of Western Balkans, who are subject of a very strong criteria if they want to make progress towards European Union? What kind of signal are we sending to them that, in fact, you are striving for stability? Is it a stability if one element, which is Schengen, it's falling apart in front of our eyes. So I think no competence are we missing. We have Article 78, free to establish rapid reaction force. I totally agree with President Verhofstadt. We need to re-establish border. By the way, we need to re-establish protection of external borders, not in order to seal the entrance into those countries. We need to re-establish it to allow all those who are eligible for international protection to be subject of a normal asylum procedure. Waving through is simply depriving those who are in need of protection of a right of normal asylum procedure. Commissioner Timmermans is right. 60% of those who are here in European Union are economic migrants. Why? Because we are not able to fingerprint, we are not able to screen and register. So I think action rather than more competence.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kocher. Call for action. I'm happy to take a couple of other questions for the panel. So if you do have them, I'd like to see you raise your hands and identify yourself. Okay, so we've satisfied all. Do I? Where? Oh, yeah, sorry, it's the light. Okay, let's start with the gentleman here.
Thank you very much. I'm international representative in Bosnia-Herzegovina based on the Dayton Treaty. But I would like to speak on the refugee crisis, and I think I can support whatever you said, but it's not enough. I think there are deeper causes of the refugee crisis, and one of them is, I think, that the development policy of the international community has failed. Because migrants come because they want to have a better life. If they would have a decent life at home, they would stay at home. Secondly, if these people would have a decent life, I don't speak about luxury, but they would have rule of law, which Commissioner Hahn mentioned, if they would be equally treated like everybody should, they would also stay at home. But they are also fleeing for this reason, that there is no justice. And we must also say, coming from Austria, that we have dealt with many of regimes, say in Africa, yeah, which were not really democratic. There was even a race to host Idi Amin, to host Gaddafi, etc., to be received by them. And these are the societies which we should actually not support. Or Mugabe is still getting from European Union last year, I think, 260 million. So these are the reasons also why we have migration. The development aid should be reassessed and rule of law should be strengthened. And of course, another root cause is a war. Yeah? And if this is eliminated, we'll have less migration. And then we can also discuss technicalities. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for making those very pertinent points. Ambassador here, please. Could you please put up your hand, sir?
Thank you. I'm Duško Lopanić, Ambassador of Serbia to the EU. As there is nobody from Serbian government here, I would just like to say a few comments concerning this debate on the migration. First, I would like to a bit answer to your question whether this crisis should bring closer or would have a problem for Balkans. I think this is, as any crisis, this is a challenge, but this is opportunity. And I would like to join Mr. Besimi in saying that the crisis as such, it is unfortunate that somehow west of that some people in Brussels were reminded by migrants that Western Balkans is closest way to the Middle East, but also this physically inside European Union. There are hopefully there are signs that this crisis can also be for the good of the cooperation. For example, it was mentioned also Serbia has sent 20 police officers to Macedonia. Cooperation with Macedonia is very well. Cooperation on the other side with Croatia has improved, and we have from the start that was rather bad, but now we have very smooth cooperation in migration issues with Croatia. What is more important is that there is much more dialogue now on European level with our countries. It was mentioned as well. All those forms of dialogue should be transferred also not only on the subject of migration, but maybe on the other subjects as well. Dialogue on highest level, dialogue between ministers, dialogue with the on the technical level that is now ongoing concerning migration should be strengthened. We that's something that is repeated in Belgrade. We should be part of solution as this crisis is concerned, but this is also opportunity to find more instruments, different ways of cooperation and different ways to strengthen enlargement as such, because the main issue of this crisis as of enlargement is security and stability. And this is something that we all need. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ambassador. I'm going to take it in a reverse. But if there is a last question, I'd like it to be really, really brief, because I know that Mr. Korczok has to leave as well for the Foreign Affairs Council. Please. Is there someone who has a question there? Okay, fine. Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Korczok, would you like to respond to some of the questions that have... Well, there was a very interesting point made by the gentleman over here about the development policy angle and the hopelessness angle.
I will not give you a recipe, but our own experience on the way to European Union. We just had to change dramatically our country in order to get in. And we were carrying out a very, very painful reforms. And European Union, can I say something maybe provocative, has never failed on its promise to enlarge. When I look back into history, I think we had to deliver, but then European Union has delivered on its promise as well, and at least the enlargements after the 90s were all huge success. It has changed completely my country for the better. The fact that we are in the Union, the fact that we are differently in terms of quality, we are differently organizing our governance in our country. We are under immense pressure already now being a member. So I believe for Bosnia-Herzegovina this is a great day yesterday. This is a new quality. There should be a new, not a new, but different behavior, because as an applicant, this is a huge commitment on your side. So just use it to change your country, to change your country for the better. For us, I can say it on the record, we've been using the vision of membership as an excuse for carrying out a very painful reform, which had a huge impact on social environment in our country. But we believed in that, transformative power. So I was maybe a bit pathetic right now, but when I look back, it paid off. And just follow our example to get in.
Thank you. Mr. Brasimi, the transformative power of the EU still roars, does it?
Thank you. Actually, I like to say that similar excuse is always when we talk about the reforms and for some a bigger goal or aim. And in this case, it's a very logical step to do from the political leadership in the countries, because when you look on the polls, what is the public support? It's still very high support in our country, and if you see in the region, it's still high about joining the EU. In this context, but I just want to come back to the point that as it takes longer, the speed matters, the time matters. It's not just you promise something, but promise means creating expectations. If you do not deliver on time, then the credibility of this promise is affected. And this is what we face now in the region. And then it reflects back to the political leadership. And it reflects back to what you want to achieve in terms of the reform. Therefore, I see when we... what I want to share with you is also that in terms of the time, in terms of the speed, we should have a mechanism to strengthen further cooperation between EU Western Balkan candidate states and the EU institutions on the process of integration, but also regional cooperation, what I just mentioned. And we should think forward on this context. I just will share with you, for example, Macedonia is among the first countries signing the Stability and Association Agreement. In 2001, then into force in 2004. Since 2005, actually for 11 years, we are a candidate country, and for the 7 year, we have recommendation to start negotiations. And in terms of the reforms, in the last years, in terms of the rule of law, fundamental rights, I have to be honest, the reports are becoming more challenging. And our commitment is important on this process, but what do you promise? So this is, and what is the credibility of these promises? So therefore, I think the new mechanism, like Berlin process, and addressing these issues then in Vienna also about the bilateral disputes among the countries in the region, is very essential. Then additional value on including youth and civil society. This is also very important. You have in the full spectrum, you don't leave only politicians, but you bring here also the other stakeholders in the society. So I think that this kind of mechanism to create new ways as a supplement, not as a substitute, but as supplements for the speeding up the process of EU integration is essential for the Western Balkans. And it is helpful, because EU concept, EU promise made the Western Balkans brought peace in the Western Balkans. But is this sustainable? It's really directly related with the credibility of process of the EU integration that we are talking about. So.
Thank you very much. Heaven, your final words.
Yes, I just wanted to respond to the point about root causes, which I think is critically important. I mentioned earlier the need for a holistic approach that wasn't simply focused on external border control. And I would say that one of the things that is notable by its absence in some of the current discussions, not just at the policy level, but more importantly at the political level in the way in which this issue is discussed, is the lack of joined upness with other parts of policy development. So clearly issues around development are critical, and we saw these things being brought together in the Valletta Summit in Malta in November, but they were brought together in a particular way which really brought us back to the issue of border control. So it ended up being about primarily readmission agreements rather than about how you address some of those root causes. Equally, I think there are really important issues around trade, around foreign policy, around arms in particular. We are very contradictory in some of our policies within Europe in terms of who is coming looking for protection or work and the countries from which they're coming with and their relationship with the European Union, frankly. So I think this holistic approach, one of the obvious ways in which we need to think about this is in terms of resettlement. So if we don't like and we found it difficult to handle people arriving in an irregular way, then let's create opportunities for large-scale resettlement. You know, the Canadians managed to resettle 25,000 people in a matter of months. It has really changed some of the discussions in the refugee camps in Jordan and Lebanon where we're working, because people feel they have hope. And as I've said before, hope is a really important part of the story. And I suppose finally, just on that note, one of the things that I've really picked up on in my time working in Greece and elsewhere interviewing people is what solidarity or responsibility sharing really looks like in practice. And we've heard a lot of talk over the last 6 months of the need for that. But certainly when it comes to relocation, Europe is talking the talk but not walking the walk. We've got a commitment to 160,000 places, and we've got the reality of 450. So we need to bridge this gap between saying what we think responsibility sharing looks like and the implications then for Western Balkans and other regions and what's actually happening in practice. And I think then people would start to have a bit more confidence that what is being talked about being delivered is actually making a difference in terms of the longer term, I'll say it again, holistic approach to migration.
Well, thank you very much. I would like to conclude now our first panel, and maybe I can conclude with the two positive elements that our speakers have elaborated during the debate. First of all, Deputy Prime Minister Bissimi told us that this migration crisis led to a strengthened and intensified regional cooperation. And if you recall correctly, back in 1999, when the Stability Pact was set up, exactly that was intended. Regional cooperation within the region was one of the very, very important elements and the very important parts of the Stability Pact. So maybe it needed that crisis in order to come about with a more intensified regional cooperation, at least when it comes to border control. And secondly, Commissioner Hahn, as well as Ambassador Kochok, mentioned that the challenge forced the EU to come up with new solutions, or maybe with faster and more efficient tools to tackle the crisis. So the crisis, as Commissioner Hahn put it, may provide a chance for progress within the EU structure. I would like to thank our speakers on behalf of Konrad Adenauer Foundation and of Friends of Europe for their contribution to a very lively debate.